Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I'm proud to bring you mages, sages, and seers with Frater Serpentis Satori. Greetings and welcome, Satori. How are you?
All right.
I'm looking forward to continuing our exploration of matters arcane and esoteric.
Well, we had decided on this topic a week ago, before things got really weird in the world of YouTube and everything else. So, well, in the past week, we had a California candidate for Secretary of State that claimed that she was being attacked by satanic witches. And that other thing I sent you about another California pastor accusing six members of his congregation of being witches.
Yes, and I had a show where I interviewed somebody from a comic book company that made a series about satanic witches. I guess it's Satanic Witches Week.
What's the counter-projection narrative that Christians fear female power and the most powerful females are witches? So they have demonized them since they burned her temples down and burned her books.
So why?
So this is nothing like a new problem. This is.
Go ahead.
I mean, this is central to what happens when Christianity became an establishment patriarchal religion. It had to demonize the priestesses, so it turns them all into satanic witches and turns goddesses who have no connection to evil just being evil because they're dark goddesses and their priestesses are in no way interested in becoming Christian.
So why the demonization? Why the projection? Why now?
Because they are on. We are stuck in an endless cycle of culture war, and those same white supremacist Christian nationalists are causing all of the big problems in the country. They're just more obvious to the witchcraft and pagan community because they're more out. Because they think they can get away with anything, they are coming after the witches again, just like they did in the 80s and just like they did at the millennium. Because they feel empowered to do so.
And do you think that this will get worse? There are counterbalances, too. Like, for instance, my wife and I recently have been watching A Handmaid's Tale. And that shows the shadow of the patriarchal culture quite effectively.
And that makes a lot of people concerned about where we go if those people win.
Right, because we're seeing... Because
that's exactly what's going to happen if those people win.
So how can people be educated that things are otherwise and that their dark projections are not necessarily accurate images of what is happening in our world?
Well, first let's separate satanic and witch. First, let's clarify that. Because Christianity believes in a binary monopolistic universe, which is why it tried not to compete with any other religions for almost 1,000 years by killing everybody else until it broke into all of its pieces and had to compete with different people that accused each other of being Satanists. Witchcraft is secular. One of the witches who used to be one of the most powerful witches in New Orleans described herself as a Catholic witch. They not only are not different, witchcraft itself is a practice, like practicing a martial art. We don't accuse people of practicing kung fu of being Satanists. Well, maybe after Matrix first came out. But it's a practice. It's not inherently anti-Christian. It's just focused on lighting candles and knowing all this folk wisdom. It is not inherently anything except a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And Satanism is tied into the same worldview as Christianity. They're just the opposite opinion in that worldview because they're choosing the other guy. And most witches are not interested in either team. So just accusing someone who believes differently of being a Satanist because Jesus is the one and only way is the problem. Because that is not polytheistic, and that is not tolerance. And that's nowhere near acceptance. It's, I don't agree with you, so you're a Satanist.
So, how do you combat that? How do you fix that? How do you shed a different light on something like that? Because people will have these conflicting opinions. And tonight, for instance, I have my... monthly the ET Entity Enigma show tonight, and we have a panel and we discuss certain things, and one of the topics that I've wanted to discuss in a while and we are discussing tonight is cosmic tricksters. And the reason why this topic came up is because in the literature and even in our forums where we discuss these things, there's always the information that comes out that some of the voices of celestials are good and some are there to deceive you. And then, of course, the question becomes is how do you tell the difference between voices that are meant to guide you and bring you towards greater understanding and greater spiritual growth and those that are meant to deceive you? So we're going to start approaching this from a UFO perspective today, and that has already come up in our Mythic Monsters forum as well. So that's going to be a separate inquiry there too. You know, how do you discern what is light, what is dark? Is light and dark a good way of looking at the world? And if not, what other ways can you look at the world? So I guess my question is going to that particular area, because some people do hold these polarized views of reality where everything is black and white, everything is light or dark, everything is good or evil. And as long as you think along those lines, you're going to live in eternal war.
Right. The problem there is dealing with spirits who don't have long resumes or good reputations. And when you're dealing with that, you really need to follow procedure and do everything the right way, because getting rid of a demon is difficult. And if you don't know what you're talking to, sometimes it is demons and lower astral things. But that's also the problem with playing with things you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually is the problem. Usually the problem is someone's using a Ouija board and getting advice from something that probably is not a good thing, but it's talking to them at their level.
Well, that's very true. And I've often basically compared it to opening the door of your house and just talking to random passersby, you know. It could be anybody that you're speaking with. You know, you could have somebody who's well-intentioned and very wise that you get into a conversation with, or it could be a swindler or a mass murderer. You really don't know by opening the door and talking, although on a psychic level, it is possible to do that just like it's possible to do that on a spiritual level. I remember back in my deep trance medium days in the 70s, where I would go into a trance and spirits would come and speak, there was always a spirit called the control, that in the language of the day. And that spirit was a well-known spirit with identifiable energies used to keep things away that shouldn't be there and allow things through that were like cleared. I don't really hear that much about controls anymore in people's psychic experiments.
Because that has fallen by the wayside because people are being led by the blind leading the blind, that we have people who barely understand what they're talking about thinking they're experts. And so we don't have all the safety features you're supposed to have when you do mediumistic activity or any of those things, because there are lots of established ways of making sure who you're talking to, but when you're just talking to anyone, you're just talking to anyone.
Well, there's,
and that's where the problems come from.
There's that too, that misunderstanding or the mistaken belief that just because someone or something has passed on from physical existence that they become all wise. And in truth, basically all they know is the fact that death isn't the end and that there's some sort of existence on the, you know, beyond what we consider the end of our existence.
Right. And they suddenly treat that thing like it's an angel or a god when you might be dealing with something that's the astral equivalent of a homeless guy. Is where all these problems come from.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also the thing about doing this without banishing, without a control, and without any of the fail safes that people have been using since the beginning of time.
Right.
Because that's where the problems come from. You're just talking to something and it's telling you to do stuff and then you do it and then you have problems.
So I'll ask you the question.
Not careful about what you're doing.
We're going to wrestle with tonight. How can someone who, and again, you can't prevent people from experimenting. They're going to do it anyway. And the information that they need to begin experimenting is very widely available now, not only in print, but through the internet. So, basically it's fairly easy for someone who has no information to start, dabbling. And to be able to have some success in their particular experiments. How does one, given the fact that that's true, learn to discern good information from not so good information? What way do they have of basically judging the quality of the information we're getting? Plus, we live in a time when information itself is under attack. And what the truth and veracity mean is under question.
That's the demonic realm itself. The demonic realm itself is shoved half of the country into alternative facts and their own baseless reality because it can, because they choose to believe that, because they think Tupac is coming back from the dead to make Trump president. But normally in the world of magic, when the same way you and I decide what we're going to talk about every month, there are
right.
a series of dreams and spirit communications and synchronicities and other people in our lives that move us from where we thought we were going to go last month to what we actually are talking about the week before. And deciding
mm-hmm.
on our topic.
Right.
And it's that same process of, it's a little bit of your own dreams. It's a little bit of the other practitioners you deal with regularly. And it's a little bit of spirits that know what they're doing, have a good amount of control over reality itself. So they can send you synchronicities. So you can see that they're listening. And they can see they're letting you know what they want you to know. a lot of garbage spirits can't do that, and they will just suck you more and more into deeper misinformation, and it doesn't check out when you talk to people who have been doing this for a while. Or you get someone like me who just tells you to burn your Ouija board.
So that's the virtue of having bodies of lore and organizations of people who whose job it is, I guess, to protect that lore, whether it be done secretly or publicly.
That's the whole point of magical initiatory organizations, is we're the specialists who understand how to work with all of the dangerous chemicals. And people who don't understand how to mix the dangerous chemicals and mess with them anyway have lab accidents. Even though, even on the internet, even today, the warnings are right there about what you're not supposed to be doing. Well, people do it anyway because they can, but they always have. Ever since everything got printed when the Golden Dawn blew up, that was unleashed on the world. And we've never been able to put the genie back in the bottle. And it's even worse now.
Well, plus a lot of the, like for instance, with you're familiar with the LAM, right? The L-A-M?
Right. Crowley's alien thing.
Yes, and that unleashed a lot of weirdness onto the UFO field that wasn't there. Well, there was always weirdness on the UFO front, but it unleashed even more weirdness.
Right, because he put his name on that. So people that listened to Crowley believed in Lamb. And that caused, well, it indirectly caused the Scientology.
Yes, Hubbard and Parsons, the rocket scientists, were both involved with those experiments.
Yeah, there's a TV show about that on CBS streaming, based on Sex and Rockets.
Okay, I wasn't aware
that
of that.
It covers a lot of that in a television show way, but it doesn't alter very much. It does pretty much show a lot of the wackiness of Hubbard and Parsons and how that led to where we are with Scientology being what it is now.
There was a great movie called The Master that basically dealt with a lot of the themes and realities of Scientology. Also, I highly recommend that to people who want to understand why people get into such organizations and how.
Yeah. No, it's all about cults and cultic ideas of truth. And how that all went down that road.
And there too, there's red flags if you know what to look for and where to look for them. But a lot of people who are seeking to find the right way often fall into groups whose intentions are not pure might be the right word for it, or good intentions. They're instead ill-intentioned.
And that's about half of groups. Even groups that purport to be light side Wiccans dabble in the Goetia sometimes. They pre-charm none, but are perfectly okay with summoning Goetic dukes. And I can't reconcile that, but I guess they can.
Well, we talked in previous episodes about the plug-and-play nature of certain types of magical systems, including hoodoo. And what I thought about, what my opinion is on that question, is that a lot of people assume that all of it's plug and play. So it doesn't really matter, what you're calling upon and, why you're calling upon it. It's just like having a particular herb or a particular crystal or a particular talisman or amulet.
And then we have problems.
Yes.
And then you unleash something you can't control because you're playing way over your level with things you don't understand because you thought it would be cool or because you could. Because almost everything in the world of magic that has to be cleaned up by the specialists is because someone thought it was cool or because they could. That's never a good enough reason in magic.
But people do that. I remember the Wizard Wars. That was a period of time, I guess, in the 70s or early 80s maybe, where people who were engaged in various magical practices, and this turned me off from a lot of the magical groups that I was exploring at the time, they were involved in seeing, just because they could, how much damage they could do to other individuals or other groups using their magic to test the strength or the level of the magic user.
Well, a lot of that had to do with the fact that there were several groups purporting to be the one true Golden Dawn in America. And simultaneously in the world of witchcraft, there were conflicts going on between the traditional witches and the self-taught people. And that all fed into each other. Because there are people who are hopping between witchcraft groups and Golden Dawn groups, and they're stirring the pot. And the people that don't understand both sides of what's going on don't understand how it all started and how out of control it got.
Yeah, it got very much out of control.
But it's both of those problems at the same time on different sides of the wall, but the people on different sides of the wall don't talk. So only the people that have friends in both communities saw what was going on. Because everybody self-justifies in periods like that. So no one's listening to any sense.
So how do you fix something like that? In antiquity, they had people like Apollonius of Tyana, part of whose incarnational job was to visit all these groups and kind of make adjustments where they'd gone off. And we've had throughout history individuals like that who pop up from time to time and readjust everything.
That happens, but once that guy blows into town, the people who are starting the trouble don't usually recognize that they're in trouble, get themselves in even worse trouble, because that guy is playing with things you don't understand, because you have an idea who trained him or what he's really there to do.
Good point.
But that happens, and that's a natural counterbalance. Oh, I mean, that's the way it works in Star Wars, that when the Jedi are out of control, the Sith arise, and the Sith kill all the Jedi to bring balance back to the universe, because everybody else doesn't know what they're doing. So Darth Vader arises, or Lord Voldemort arises, because the rest of you are just acting like bad children on a junior high playground. And in periods like that, no one's following any rules. There's no respect. And everybody is playing with things they shouldn't be. Because whenever the enforcer types have to show up, it's always bad for everybody. Because it is the equivalent of, like, the magical FBI is in town.
Mm-hmm.
So you better know that you didn't do anything wrong when you start seeing people getting questioned by the magical FBI. Because chances are you're guilty of something. Especially if you were engaged, even if you're just engaged at a social level and making it worse. Because then you're at least a troublemaker. Maybe you're just doing it for ego gain and because it's fun to destroy other people's organizations and reputations. Because there's plenty of that in
yes,
the world of magic. There's plenty
yes,
of I can make a personal attack against you because I can.
Because I can, yeah. That's true in all spheres of activity, even beyond the metaphysical and the magical.
But it didn't used to be this bad, and it's our long slide toward living in a society without rules or ethics or honor. That as we move more and more toward civic anarchy, we stop giving up civility. And when you give up civility and honor, this is what happens. People do things because they can. Because they don't think about the other guy. They don't think about what does that do to my society.
Yeah, it's very
or
important
they don't care.
A moral compass. I like the moral compass of the Rotarians. They have like a 4-point, I'm trying to locate right now. They have a 4-way test, they call it. And they ask themselves 4 questions before making any decision. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? So there you go, an entire philosophy condensed to 4 questions. And I found that regardless of whether you're a Rotarian or not, it's a good way to live your life.
Yeah, it keeps you from doing all of the terrible things bad people do for fun.
So do you think that the circumstances that we have on our planet right now that we're all dealing with to some extent or another are like Darth Vader or Voldemort, you know, something that has arisen from our darkness to restore balance to our existence?
Not exactly. I think this is darkness that I think these are issues. Like the Handmaid's Tale, that as white Christians have become more and more of a minority since 1969, since the Vietnam War and everything went the way it went in the 70s, they have become more and more angry and more resentful and more hateful to otherness. Because if you listen to what they're, I mean, it just happened again this week too, up in Canada, in Ottawa, that the attack there isn't really about masks. It's really about, I mean, there are people in Canada with Confederate flags. So when did this start?
Yeah, it's very difficult not to see that and not to realize that whatever is going on right now, it's unresolved issues that go back to the time of the Civil War, if not much earlier.
Yeah, and so we're dealing with white Christian nationalists at war with modern society, because they feel victimized and because their binary point of view makes everybody who's not them a Satanist. And so they feel anything goes to prevent people who watch Rachel Maddow from controlling the government.
And each side demonizes the other, so that light and darkness, good and evil are represented. Like I like listening to all perspectives, and I especially seek out perspectives that don't agree with what I happen to believe, because I believe it's a healthy thing to challenge your perspectives. And I can't believe some of the things I'm hearing from the mouths of people about what I happen to represent in the world. Again, I also hear them reflect back some of the same fears and concerns that are verbalized by people who are more in line with my way of thinking. So it's very, very provoking of thought, and it's caused lots of meditation sessions to try to gain insights and to reconcile the opposing views.
Yeah, and part of it is we are going to have to deal with the fact that a third of our country doesn't believe in science and facts. And by making science part of otherness, they've put themselves in a very, because of the attack on specialists, academia, science, and mainstream news, because they are living in a bubble, the people in that speaking a language that doesn't make sense to people outside their bubble. Like, mighty was the shock among the kids who used to work for Reverend Zombie when we had to explain to our friends in the FBI that, no, we're not going to bring Tupac back. No. We understand there's a rumor about that, but we've discussed it among ourselves, and that's not really going to happen. And that's a really expensive, complicated ritual. If you can get three of us to do it.
So again, clearly,
I don't think Voldemort's or Hitler's or any of those characters are necessary. I think they arise because of the binariness, because the dark side needs a leader who is willing to say out loud what everybody believes but no one can say. It was the same thing with Cromwell. It was the same thing with Hitler, that this cycle is this cycle, and it always comes from the same societal mental illness.
And yet we need to repeat it periodically.
Because we haven't gotten rid of the binaryism and the fear of otherness and the fear of female power and the fear of Jews that is the candle wax of the candle. Since we haven't really dealt with the real issues that led to the rise of Hitler, Nazism hasn't gone away. And since a big chunk of America thinks the South will rise again, we haven't really dealt with that either.
No, we haven't dealt with those things, and they didn't go away. On one level, the Civil War afterwards, there was attempts to make nice and not to cause hardship, which wound up causing lots of hardship and also allowing streams of thought to continue that were never resolved. And, so the South became the rebels, that's a very attractive archetypal story for people.
And that's where they still are, because they still feel like their side should have won, and they're the good guys. But the Union and the military-industrial complex crushed them under boot in the name of what they called progress. But that's that.
And I've been studying lately the outrage culture that we find ourselves in, regardless of where you happen to stand. A lot of the information that you're getting is fueled and colored by outrage. And again, it's a form of sorcery. It's a form of mass manipulation. It's very effective, the outrage.
Because anger is, anger leads to hate. Hate leads
to the dark side.
Back to the Sith again. No, but Yoda's quote is very instructive, especially in our current times. Because that was our comment when we actually did the episode about Star Wars and politics, is a very bright friend of mine offhandedly commented about, like, people would be protesting in the streets if Revenge of the Sith had come out last week. But because we got the sequels and not the prequels, it's different. But if the prequels had come out while Trump was president, people would be bombing movie theaters because they would realize the obvious political commentary there and take it personally. But because those movies came out at the millennium and not 20 years later, only the people that thought about that. But my friend was right. If we reversed what order the movies came out in, God knows how crazy things would have been when Revenge of the Sith came out. Because the right-wing haters would have just read into it what is right there to read, what is intentionally there to read.
Yeah, they were very prophetic. They became part of our pop cultural mythology, those films. You know, again, whether you liked or didn't like individual episodes, they became part of our global mythology. Yes, they reflected things that it took years to happen and seemed unbelievable when they were portrayed, but they did happen, or they are happening on some level.
And they were meant to reflect the rise of Nazi Germany. They were based on historical context because that's how Hitler rose to power. That's how Cromwell rose to power. That's how Julius Caesar rose to power. I guess most modern people don't think about Julius Caesar as a Trumpian character. But those people need to watch the HBO Rome show. That's spelled out really clearly.
Yeah, Rome was a very interesting look at things. And I missed that. They never made the third season or the follow-up series. And then they never made the movies that they were talking about. But very, very, very powerful miniseries, two seasons.
Yeah, the two seasons are very, very good. But I guess most modern people aren't used to thinking about Julius Caesar as a voice of the angry mob. Because that was so long ago, we don't really think about how much he, and a little bit of help from, Plato's Republic, of course, because we always have a rise of fascism tied to Plato's Republic.
Yeah, talk about Plato's Republic, because again, I always point out to people that antiquity in even mythology is often instructional in telling you what not to do or what would happen if you did something, and it's not necessarily there for you to emulate. And Plato's Republic falls into that category as well.
Well, Plato's Republic is the handbook for doing what Fox News and Facebook do. You control what people... The philosopher kings decide what's real. They control the media and tell people what's real. And they don't allow for dissent. Dissent is illegal in the Republic.
So
but that also comes from the fact that well, people want to be right. And Plato knew that. Because that was his whole point.
So reading the Republic is very important, but not for many of the reasons that people believe it's important to read the Republic.
No, if anything, Republic is a weird backhand against Socrates. Not that Socrates was the most Republican Democrat with a small d in ancient history, but Socrates at least respected Athenian norms and understood that democracy is a flawed system, but it's a functional system. Republic, Plato's Republic is an outline for where we are now. Where we are now is directly going step by step by the Republic. Just like the Star Wars prequels.
Now,
because that also follows the step-by-step leadership manual that is Plato's Republic. Palpatine is a great student of both Machiavelli and Plato.
Now, you quote popular culture a lot, and you make references to popular culture a lot. I found that that's a very powerful thing to do. My way of looking at things is that these are the mythologies of the now, and they resonate with people more than some of the ancient stories, which are very obscure, and you'd have to like really be a scholar to seek them out, whereas the pop culture is in your face, and you can't help but absorb whether you want to or not. So it's a very effective way of expressing yourself. Why do you tap into popular culture so much?
On some level, it is there are popular mythologies, but there also are popular entertainment. And right now, I am very slowly watching the Beatles documentary on Disney.
Okay.
Very, very slowly, because it's difficult for me. I'm not a musician. I'm watching it just to watch it. And my same friend who made the comment about Star Wars a while ago made a comment that it was like being stuck at a dinner party with a married couple who you're friends with one member of the married couple, but you're not friends with both. And they keep having an argument rather than like talk about stuff.
Okay.
They're having an argument, but you're stuck at the dinner table. You
okay.
Can't really leave because you're a guest. So you have to sit through it. And that was her opinion on the Beatles documentary. And my work wife from the voodoo shop said something about like how she needed to have like the first pint of whiskey, watch an hour, stop, and do it again later. And I realized that what they were both trying to tell me was something that I had said a long time ago in high school. And I was joking about it when I said it, that in the 80s, a lot of the former Beatles who were still alive were putting out solo albums. And Paul McCartney put out a James Bond song.
Okay.
So at one point while I'm in high school, I joke about the fact that I don't really believe in live action Paul McCartney. I think I liked him better as a cartoon. And this week watching Young Justice with one of my roommates, and the compare and contrast between Titans and Young Justice and how Barbara Gordon and Dick Grayson are handled in live action versus animation brought that to the top of my mind. Watching the Beatles documentary brought back that comment I made when I was a freshman in high school that I'm not sure I dig this live action John Lennon dude. I think I like the animated one better.
Okay.
On some level, that's completely ridiculous,
uh-huh.
But not completely. Since I'm a child of the 80s, there's no way I could have ever seen the Beatles live.
Right.
Right. And because I grew up in a college town, most of my exposure to the Beatles when I was in junior high school was the cartoons. I mean, in my where I grew up, even the cartoons were you showed them to kids in elementary school where I grew up. So with that part of it, we're dealing with the mythological beetles in the cartoons versus watching them cross out lines in lyrics and argue about how much they want to be anti-white supremacists with a Get Back song, how much they want Get Back to be a political song. And on some level, that's what, but that distills all of it about pop culture. That's on some level, there is the myth about where this song comes from and why this song is important. And there are the mythological versions of the characters, who are the animated Beatles. And then there's the documentary. And it's actually having to deal with these are guys with relationships. Yoko Ono is a real person. Got to deal with that. Yoko Ono exists. You can't just whitewash Yoko Ono away. But I guess Christians are doing it with Mary Magdalene. I guess it's exactly parallel to how Christians are about Mary Magdalene. They just don't want to talk about that. They just want to make Mary Magdalene the original Yoko Ono. But she broke up the band. Then what happened, and, you know, blame Yoko Ono.
Well, I think it's very interesting, the whole thing with Mary Magdalene and the Grail mysteries. You know, those were attempts since the days of the troubadours to start re-empowering or reintroducing the feminine into our spirituality. And that's still going on. It's come out several times, those whole stories. Is the Da Vinci Code most recently. Before then, it was Holy Blood, Holy Grail. Before then, it was the Arco volume. It seems like every 20 or so years, there's an effort to do that again.
It normally comes right after a time like this. It normally comes right after the Wizard War. It normally comes right after the rise of the darkness. That when the darkness finally cannibalizes itself, we have to think about healing the wounded land. Because that's why you're seeking the Grail. You're seeking the Grail to heal the wounded land, because the king is not the king. The king has been replaced by these gruesome warlords who do what they want to do.
So part of, if you're aware of the power of stories, and if you're tapped into this type of stuff, you are, the challenge becomes, given the fact that these are the plot elements, how do you write a better story? Because we've weaponized stories.
That should probably be our next episode, because I was thinking we do need to do something up the street called Hecate is My Showrunner. And explain patronage in a more, I don't know if it's a more surreal way. It's the way I experience it, but I've been dealing with it forever. Understand how the gods influence my reality. But mm-hmm. That's a longer topic.
Yeah, that's a much longer topic.
But the short answer is synchronicity. That we are pulled into things when we are pulled into them, because the universe is trying to show us something or teach us something. And when we resist those things is when we have problems.
So therein lies the challenge not resisting these things while remaining having free agency.
Yeah, but that's always the issue with free will, however much freedom we actually have.
So that is something we're gonna tackle next time. because we're down to our last few minutes of conversation for today. For people who, again, are going to dabble regardless of, you know, what we say or not say, what are some, I guess, pointers you can give to them that'll keep them safe and safer?
Don't do it by yourself.
Okay.
Don't do it by yourself. Find a community. Whatever you're into, find a community on Discord. Find some YouTube stations that have communities on Discord. And talk to other people. You shouldn't be doing this by yourself. And the world of magic has always been filled with misinformation and disinformation. It's just a whole lot worse now than it was 20 years ago. And it was bad 20 years ago. But you should find community. You should read books. And try to find someone who's an elder you respect. Try to find someone who actually has been doing this, who hasn't been winging it their whole lives.
Very wisely said. I would add to that, read books on the topic before dabbling. Read books that give you different perspectives so that at least you have a better idea as to what to expect, what can happen, and what can go wrong, and then what to do if something goes wrong, so that at least you're well aware of what you're doing.
But a lot of these people just see something on social media and decide to play around with things. I mean, even something most of you think is as innocent as fairies and house elves can burn down your house and kill
and
your
the
pet.
The folklore they often do.
It happens more than people think, but once people do that, they don't want to admit that that's what they did.
Yeah, that's
they'd rather just...
That I've spent many shows trying to point things out. A lot of the things that we consider harmless were not considered harmless by the ancients. And one example I always bring up is runes. If you read the Icelandic sagas, even fierce and feared Vikings like Egil Skallagrimsson gave the runes a wide berth because they were dangerous. And yet, you know, now people play with the runes all the time.
Yeah, and that's exactly the problem, is you're using things without context because you can.
Now there,
because one of my friends once thought that was the definition of Satanism. She once thought the definition of Satanism is not do what thou wilt, but do what I want because I can. And she always thought that anyone with that attitude was a Satanist, whatever lip service they gave. What if you pretend to really believe you're a Satanist?
Well, that is one way of looking at things, I suppose.
That's the opinion of one of the senior people in the House of Zombies. That has always been her opinion. And whenever I have to do a reality check on someone and I run that litmus test, that pretty much tells me that someone's a bad guy, even without breaking Yoda's commandment.
So again, it boils down to the choice of Hercules, service to self or service to others. And one road is easier than the other. It'll take you to a totally different place. And the more difficult road of service to others is what will get you eventually on Olympus, though.
Right. But that's also the entire issue of human life. Are you going to do the easy thing or are you going to do the right thing? And more and more and more in the West, we've been drifting toward the easy thing, even with news, even with letting social media tell me what's real.
And on that note, we have to cut our conversation short until next time. The hour passes quickly. We cover a lot of ground, not sequentially, but synchronistically and syncretically. These conversations are all very connected and shed light on each other. So thank you very much, Satori, for the time, for the energy, and for the insights. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Be well, my friend.
All right. Bye.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called and waited patiently in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'd be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. For the little time we have left, I will play Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real.